This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning into the Planet Microcap Podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's BobbyKKraft. And you are listening to episode 18. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Alan Brockstein, the cannabis financial analyst of 420investor.com. In episode 3, we learned more about the business of cannabis and marijuana, but didn't cover a lot of what's going on from a capital markets perspective. So I wanted a better understanding of the industry from the point of view of an investor. There are a lot of publicly traded companies in the cannabis space, and it's important to me to understand what we should look out for when looking at a potential company to invest in. The goal for this episode is to get a better understanding of the marijuana industry in the capital markets, what, as an investor, we should look out for when considering an investment in a public cannabis company, how to evaluate management, and more. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 18 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy my interview with Alan Brockstein, but first, a word from our sponsor. If you're looking to find the next great microcap idea, join us for the 3rd Annual Growth Capital Expo, May 3rd through the 5th, 2016 at Caesars Palace in exciting Las Vegas. You will have the opportunity to meet and network with a who's who from the microcap stock market. The Growth Capital Expo combines education with networking and access to C-level executives. It's easy to register. Just go to growthcapitalexpo.com. See you in Las Vegas. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I have Alan Brockstein from 420investor.com on the program. Alan, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me back.
It's my pleasure. I'm excited to do the interview with you. So today's episode is we're talking about how to navigate the marijuana investing waters, you know, with cannabis and being something that's been out there for a while now. We're starting to kind of see what's been going on in the industry because there have been a few years under our belt. So first things first, before we get into all that, Alan, what's your background? How did you get into starting 420 Investor and New Cannabis Ventures?
Sure. So 420 Investor launched in September of 2013. So I've had the community going for 2.5 years now. The genesis of that was a little over 3 years ago, at the beginning of 2013, and to put that in perspective, that was right after Colorado and Washington had voted to legalize but weren't yet implemented. I kind of stumbled onto the fact that there were publicly traded cannabis stocks, although I called them marijuana back then. Now I call them cannabis. But so I started to dig into it, and I was like, wow, this is just horrible. These companies are just insanely overvalued and terrible disclosures. I couldn't even believe it. So my background prior to that was being a equity analyst and bond analyst for a couple of decades. So, you know, coming from an investment background, but, you know, blue chip companies and, you know, mid-cap growth, not penny stocks. So I had a lot of learning to do on a lot of fronts, but I spent those next 6 months or so learning more about cannabis. It was not a big part of my life at that time. You know, like most people in college, I had experimented and maybe a little bit after college, but it had been literally a couple of decades since I had even seen it. So I started to learn a lot, Bobby, about social justice issues, about the medicinal benefits as well. So I really started to develop an advocacy even then. At the same time, I was getting known to be a basher of these marijuana stocks. I was publishing on Seeking Alpha, building up a big following there. A lot of people, they hated me at first, but they ended up liking me. So to fast forward a little bit, after we launched 420 Investor in September 2013, Colorado went legal, and these stocks just went crazy. It didn't matter if it was a terrible company or a okay company. They all went up tremendously, some of them more than 20-fold. And that petered out pretty quickly in early 2014. And so to take the story just a little bit more forward, I was spending a lot of time looking, dealing with private investors and private companies. And there's a huge, we can talk more about it, but there's just a huge disconnect because cannabis is legal. You don't have financial intermediaries in there like Goldman Sachs. So it's kind of very hard for real cannabis companies and real investors to connect. So we launched New Cannabis Ventures in September of 2015 with a goal of being a place to save people time when they're trying to learn about the real cannabis industry. It's a B2B focused site, content aggregation. So I'm taking all the stuff I read, picking out kind of what is important, condensing it, giving links back, and have a lot of people that like it. It saves them time.
Well, I'm a subscriber myself, and I do appreciate every time I get the new updates. So, okay. So what I want to know now is, you know, let's get into an overview of the marijuana industry in the capital markets. I mean, I don't know if you knew this, actually. My first job on Wall Street, I was a junior research analyst, and I was just coming off my junior year, and the first thing that my boss had me research were marijuana stocks. So, yeah. So I, needless to say, I was stoked. I was like, oh my God, this is the best introduction ever, you know, and this was back in 2010. So, you know, I've always had like a little bit of a background, but even then I was still kind of like, you know, this is, it's still very confusing, you know?
Yep.
So that kind of leads into this next question. You know, how did it start in the capital markets? You know, what were some of the first companies that went public, and how has it kind of evolved over time?
Sure. So, you know, I obviously went back and researched some of this. There's one company that went away that I called General Cannabis, which is not to be confused with a new General Cannabis. But the first one to go public was, it was a real tight race, but the winner was Medical Marijuana Inc. And at the mm-hmm. time, the guy behind it was Bruce Perlowin, who's a very famous drug smuggler, and he runs another company called Hemp, which came public 2 years later. There was right after Medical Marijuana Inc., which is MJNA, and by the way, I have no position in any of these stocks. I may forget to say that, but I don't have a position in any of those stocks. MJNA was followed by a company called Cannabis Science, and that symbol is CBIS. So these companies, CBIS was actually a SEC filer, but the others were not. And, yeah, they never did anything. They talked and issued press releases. They weren't very real. And when I came onto the scene in 2013, early 13, there were maybe 8 to 10 companies at that time, most of them on the pink sheets, not SEC filers. And then when 2014 hit and all the stocks started taking off, and there were a few more that had come on, by the way, but there weren't that many. There were a couple of dozen right at the beginning of 2014. And then, you know, I count now, Bobby, including Canadians, like 360.
Wow.
So, you know, I came on very negative, positive on the industry, negative on these stocks. And penny stocks have an inordinate amount of risk. There's a lot of fraud, lack of oversight. You don't have institutional investors. It's not too real when it comes to investing. At the beginning, I tried to give these companies some slack because the reality was if they wanted to go public, they couldn't get a loan from the bank. And if they wanted to access capital, going public was probably a reasonable idea. And they weren't going to go public on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange. But I've seen so much fraud. I always tell people over 90% of these companies are just not likely to succeed or outright fraud, probably tilted half and half on that breakdown of that 90%. But there are a few good companies, I would say, and it's been interesting to see some progress.
You know, it's so interesting you say that because, you know, it's one of those booming industries where while there's so much opportunity because of the haziness, for no pun intended, in the space, you know, you kind of don't know really where to turn, you know, and on that note, you know, like, what are some of the different sectors within the industry? You know, we obviously know about the dealing with the flower itself, which is always, you know, which has always been the first and foremost thing. But there's so many different ancillary sectors within the industry.
Right. So, you know, I kind of break down the public market into real cannabis companies and the rest. And by real, I don't mean the company's not real, but like touching direct cannabis, I should say, not real. And there have been very few direct cannabis companies. One of them that's doing very well right now is TerraTech, symbol TRTC. I know you've interviewed them before. And that stock has quadrupled to start the year. And they came out at the beginning of the year. This was not a surprise. They were always talking about doing this. It's a question of when.
Full disclosure, you're not a shareholder, right? Or you are?
I'm not a shareholder. So, yeah, I better keep saying that in case somebody listens in, not to the whole interview. So on TerraTech, where I'm not a shareholder, the stock quadrupled after they bought a related entity called Bloom in Oakland. It's one of the Oakland has one of the best markets in the country in terms of friendly regulation and just some good dispensaries there. So they bought this related entity there. It just closed March 31st, and that really rocketed the stock. They're in California, TerraTech in Nevada. So TerraTech really is separate from all these other OTC stocks in that respect. Another touch the plant type of company would be biotech, and there's a company GW Pharma, symbol GWPH. It also trades in London with GWP is the symbol. I don't own any of that. That's been one of the real positive stories, although it had a really rough ending to 2015. But most people have heard of that when it trades on the NASDAQ as well, so it's not a penny stock. And they're focused on their big issue right now is getting this drug Epidiolex, which treats rare forms of childhood epilepsy seizures, out of phase 3 trials and past the FDA. So that's going to be real exciting. So then on the rest of the industry, you know, I don't know if I have an official breakdown, but the way I think about it, you have some consulting services, and there's some, you know, I think some decent companies that fall into that bucket. And so these are companies that are out there. You know, new states open up, and they need the entrepreneurs that want to bid for licenses there need help. So these consulting companies, there's a few of those. There's product manufacturers. Then you have the accessory and products for the cultivation, I should say. So, you know, we don't need to name a lot of names, but there are a handful of companies that I think really are interesting. Most of them have some structural issues. They need to fix the balance sheet. A lot of little things like that that make investment risky, but the companies seem pretty solid, Bobby.
So basically it breaks down kind of like, all right, so there's your classic dealing with the plant. There's technology, healthcare, consulting services, even real estate, right? You know,
yeah, there used to be some real estate plays, and I guess there's still some out there. There was a great story at the beginning of 2014, and unfortunately the SEC stepped on that one, and it wasn't even the company's fault. But that was a model that people thought was going to take off, that you could raise a little bit of money, go and borrow again. You know, borrow. This company in particular had a relationship with a what's called a business development company, so they were going to lend them the money. And so the problem with that model was it was so easy to replicate. So you had and it wasn't just the public. You know, private companies were doing it. So there were a whole bunch of people that thought, you know, what a great idea. We don't want to actually cultivate or sell, but we'll own the properties. So it just, unfortunately, was very competitive.
And collect rent, basically.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've definitely come across a few of those stories for sure. And it seemed...
Oh, you know, I have another one for you. So security is a big issue. So you'll see some security. There's several security companies out there.
Mm-hmm. So like, so you mean like the seed to sale type stuff?
No, talking about... armored cars and guards.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's one I actually hadn't even considered before.
Yeah, So I don't have my complete list. I think the big picture way to think about it is the direct and indirect, and then within indirect, you have products and services. That's really the way I think about it. And then you can go deeper and deeper. And on the direct, I would include those biotech or pharmaceutical plays, which there's a few of those.
Okay. So now we're going to get to the question that, you know, I've asked many times, but, you know, it seems like it's always changing, but I'm going to ask it again. You know, I want to know, you know, how do federal regulations affect the industry? I mean, what should investors be aware of and maybe even potentially look out for, especially with the election coming up in November?
Yeah, so this is a huge problem. So actually, before I answer that question, I want to just back up one step because I want to make your listeners aware, because this would have been a good segue. I spend a lot of my time focused on Canadian producers. So I said there aren't that many. That was actually in the United States. In Canada, they have federally legal medical marijuana, and they're likely to have legal cannabis within the next couple of years. So there are a bunch of companies there that are very interesting. I just wanted to, that reminded me when we talk about legalization. And so,
especially with Trudeau. Trudeau's made that one of his main campaign points, yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
Oh, they're working on it. I mean, it's probably not going to happen as fast as everybody would like it to. And it's a pretty complex issue because you have a very well-established gray market, let's call it. Like, these are very decent, legitimate people, but they're breaking the law.
Right.
And then you have the federal system, and there's kind of a lot of animosity between those two systems, and they need to reconcile that. But so that's one of the reasons I like Canada, because you have federal legality. In the United States, the list is very long about all the problems with federal illegality. I mean, first of all...
Hold on, real quick, Alan. This might be a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You know, while it's still federally illegal down here, you know, and it's legal to cultivate marijuana for medical purposes. And let's say it does become legal, while down here it's still illegal. You know, will U.S. investors still be able to participate and buy stock and sell stock in these companies that are listed in Canada?
Yes. I mean, there was some discussion a couple of years ago that you could be accused of money laundering or something if you were a U.S. investor and you sent money across the border or something, but I don't think there's any truth to that. So the likelihood of you being cracked down upon as an investor in a federally legal entity in another country is just insane. So, the first and foremost issue with federal illegality is that things could change very quickly. You mentioned the elections in November. And so what a lot of people don't understand, right now, every single business that sells or even researches, anybody that's doing anything with cannabis right now is breaking the federal law unless their research is approved by the FDA and the DEA. Mm-hmm. So things could change. The only reason people are able to do anything right now is something called a Cole memo that Eric Holder, who's no longer part of the DOJ, put out in late 2013, August of 2013. And that basically said, if you follow these 8 rules, then we're not going to mess with you. And so that gave people kind of the green light to move ahead. But the problem is, that's not a law. That's an administrative order. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm glad Chris Christie dropped out pretty fast, but, you know, rumor has it that he could be the AG for Trump, which that's probably not happening anyway. That's not the point of our conversation today. But imagine that scenario, and all of a sudden, he's a big anti-cannabis person, and he doesn't even believe in medical cannabis. His state has the worst program. But so that's risk number one, that you're building a business and it could just be pulled out from under you. Or you could go to jail as an owner, not as a stockholder probably, but as an operator. And then there's something called 280E. We don't have to get into it too much, but there's some arcane laws dating back to the 80s. The cocaine drug runners out of Miami kind of led to this, where the federal government won't let you deduct operating costs. So the marginal tax rate in the cannabis industry, because it's a Schedule I drug, it's treated like cocaine, can be 75%. So, you know, I mentioned TerraTech, which I don't have a position in earlier, and so they're that this Bloom that they bought, you know, they're paying taxes out the wazoo. So, you know, when you're investing in a company, you don't want to pay 75% tax rate unless you're investing in like a Russian company. So, so that's an issue. But it gets a lot deeper. We don't have to go into all these, but because it's state by state by state, you know, if you were to open up a cheese factory in Wisconsin and you wanted to sell in Illinois, you would just make your cheese and drive it across the border. Mm-hmm. Can't do that with cannabis. So very capital intensive to set up these new facilities, and there's a lot more of the problems. Federal illegality means you can't advertise. Both, you know, billboards are pretty difficult to do, although I hear in Las Vegas they're going to do that, but newspaper ads, these things don't happen. Well, then you say, all right, well, online, Facebook, Instagram, they'll shut your account down randomly. It's pretty crazy. So it is a very difficult industry. There's a lot of startups. Cash is hard. Banking, that's a huge issue. I should have mentioned probably higher on the list. You know, a lot of this industry takes place in cash because the banks, there's no reason they can't take the cash or provide credit cards, but they won't because they're very conservative and they don't want to take any chances.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, with the election coming up in November, is there anything critical that you think is, you know, that we should maybe look out for as, you know, if we're looking at investing in the space?
Okay. So investing in trading, I want to break this apart real quick because I've been saying all year, I think there's a huge trading opportunity. We've seen it before. This year is going to be the mother of all election years because nobody was paying attention. Not too many people were paying attention in 2012 when Colorado and Washington, I don't even think they were expected to pass. And all of a sudden, you have these two legal states. And like I said, I stumbled onto this the stock aspect just a few months later, and there weren't that many of them. Now there's this huge awareness, and there's a lot of traders out there, and I've already started to notice it, Bobby. We're seeing volumes pick up, a lot of volatility in the stocks. There's a lot of trading going on now. There's going to be a crescendo into the year in because we're not sure how many elections there are actually going to be for states to vote, but it could be as many as seven. Probably going to be about four or five. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But two of them are very big. Nevada is a for sure, so we will be seeing that. And California is a likely. And so there are a lot of people that will be focused on that. So that's the trading side. The investing side, you know, we talked earlier, there's a huge disconnect. The cannabis industry isn't really correlated to these cannabis stocks. So with that said, there's some things going on beyond these elections. There's the DEA. I don't think they will, but they may reschedule cannabis later this quarter, actually. Mm. A lot of people are counting on that. I would not count on it, but that would be a real positive. It could help address some of these issues in terms of being able to do research, which would be a big change. It's very difficult to do research now. That's another federal illegality problem. It could help with the banking issues, and it would also, I think, encourage more people to come into the industry, you know, from other industries, make the industry more legitimate, I guess is the way to say that. So that's something to look out for. I think, what else later this year? I think what happens is when you see more states adopting it, and, you know, we already have, I think, 58% of people, adults, would vote to legalize cannabis. That's not from medicinal. That's just outright. Mm-hmm. So we know where we're headed, and people will start to think that it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
All right. So this is actually a perfect segue because, you know, I asked you what we're going to look out for in the elections. But now, all right, as an investor, let's get down to it. What should we look out for when considering an investment in a public cannabis company? What's your criteria?
Yeah, I always break it into several buckets. I like to look at the management team. I call that the people. I like to look at the business model. I call that the plan. And then I like to look at the finances. I call that pecuniary. So I come up with three P's. So that's the way I like to frame it. And you know, the reality is...
So wait, what is that? The people, the plan, and what?
The pecuniary. It's a weird word, but it starts with a P. I like the three P's.
Okay.
So the people part, if we're looking at the publicly traded companies, you know, most of these, like I said, are just, you shouldn't waste your time with them. It's a joke. If you're a trader, fine. But if you're talking about really trying to find a company that you can ride for the next couple of years, most of these are a joke. Most of the people at these public companies have minimal cannabis experience or regular business experience. So the investors, whether they're looking at private or public companies, they need to find management teams that bring both old world expertise and new world business processes. So people that have had experience with cannabis for decades, you know, and those people obviously were, operating illegally. So that can be a problem. So trying to find the right people with the right records and combining those with people that have run other types of companies. And I'm starting to see it. I run into people at companies where they've come from, you know, companies that you've heard of before, as opposed to, you know, most penny stocks, you've never heard of these people. If you Google them, they don't even exist. So, but anyway, so I think understanding your management team, and most people will say in a startup type company, that's your number one criterion. You want to bet on the people. And then the business model, you know, there are some things I'm focused on. If you're coming into this space and you're looking for what's going to make sense in the long run, I think you have to be careful about buying a cultivation company. That's going to be a commodity. So, well, the good news on the public side, you don't have to worry about that. There aren't that many. There's one that I'm aware of. But if you're looking in the private side, that's a bigger thing. So that's one issue. Kind of the opposite of that. Because cannabis is going to be a commodity, most likely, as you see more and more production in larger scale, and you'll still have craft cannabis, by the way, but I'm just speaking broadly. It's important to be able to do two things: comply with laws and lower your operating costs. So technology companies that can help you comply and not get in trouble with the regulators, I think that's a winner. And those companies aren't so much in the public market, unfortunately. But the companies that can help you reduce your costs of production, there are some examples of those.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So LED lights, that might be an interesting topic for people to pursue, because there is a technology change. It's happening. It's been slow. But there's some companies that are related to LEDs.
Mm-hmm. What about, like, social media?
So social media, that's an interesting one, because there is a company out there, Mass Roots, symbols MSRT. I don't have a position. And they kind of addressed that problem I raised a few minutes ago, that it's very difficult to advertise. So they've created a closed community. They call it semi-anonymous. So you could be Bobby or you could be Roberto, and nobody would know who you are. So the idea being that you don't want to post content about your cannabis consumption on LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever, because your grandmother might see it, or your, you know, somebody that you don't necessarily, because of stigma issues or just privacy issues. So they've created this community. The business model is you have all these people there. They're using all these hashtags and everything, and you can take that data and sell it to the dispensaries or the brands and tap into the market. We'll see if it plays out that way. Mass Roots hasn't really delivered yet. They just got started, though, to give them some credit. But the problem with that type of solution, if we do go legal, then all of a sudden that's totally unnecessary.
Right. Okay. So all right. So we covered, you know, people. You know, it's important.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we got to do the best one. Right.
I was waiting for the pecuniary.
Yes. So that's the most important, because if you don't have access to capital, you're not going to grow your business. And for any of your listeners that don't know penny stocks, I mean, that's all the penny stock game is. It's dilute, 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 and they have access to very expensive capital. I've seen some companies, I mean, I'm not kidding, they've done six-month loans at 84% effectively, when you factor in all the fees and discounts and penalties and all this. And that's only if you pay it off. If you don't pay it off, it's deadly. So the number one advice I would give to people, number one, part one of it is, if they don't file with the SEC, just disregard them. They're not going to be a long-term play. But number two, if they do file with the SEC, then you have to understand their capital structure. Do they have toxic convertible notes? Do they have, you know, we talked about TerraTech earlier, TRTC. I don't have a position. They have been able to access capital using an equity line at a 5% discount, which that's a real positive sign. And that's, you know, when you're looking for signs of success, that's it. Because a lot of times these companies sell equity at 35, 40% discounts. So I think if you're thinking about the long term, you want to make sure that your company doesn't have a lot of toxic convertible preferred or convertible debt, and that they have a propensity to be able to access capital at reasonable cost. And so that's one of the reasons I like Canada so much, by the way. So, I mean, they're doing big deals up there.
So would it be, so I guess it would have to be companies that, you know, aren't dealing directly with the plant, because otherwise they wouldn't. I mean, I'm just going by
dealing with the plant, and they are. So I don't know that that's necessarily true. When it comes to equity, you know, like TerraTech has shown that they can raise equity capital. Not as good as the Canadian companies, by the way. But so, yeah, I hope we do see more cannabis touching companies, because there's some great companies out there, and there will be chains in the future. And already we're starting to see multi-state operations from people, and it's very complicated the way they set it up. But we're starting to see some of these better retailers that can operate in the light of day start to use these great business processes, data analytics, understanding their customer, loyalty cards, all these bells and whistles that you'd expect from Starbucks. They're doing it to the cannabis industry in Colorado and Washington and Oregon, and you're starting to see some coming. So I'm excited that down the road, see those types of companies as potential investments.
So on the management side, I know we covered it a little bit, but I figured I wanted to get like a little deeper, just because, you know, I've met the CEOs who have you know, been in the business for multiple decades, you know, obviously not legally, but at least they have that experience. They understand the industry, they understand the plant, at least.
Right.
You know, and but then you have the others who just who are may be entrepreneurs, see an opportunity, you know, kind of still learning. But in your experience, you know, what for the more successful companies, and even for some of the not as successful companies, you know, what are, do you think are like the key defining elements that you're like, okay, I'm looking for this, this, this for the good one. If I see this, this, and that, then they're probably, ugh, you know.
Okay, so I used to be a drug runner in 1970, so I'm qualified to run a public company now. That makes no sense. I used to run be a drug runner in the 1970s, but I have this sharp guy who used to work at Microsoft working with me. Now all of a sudden it starts to sound a little bit better. So I think I was saying this earlier, you want to see management teams that kind of are able to pull either directly or indirectly. So I think a lot of times somebody can think they understand a business, but they really don't. So for instance, you know, the guy could be really smart about business, but know nothing about the cannabis industry. Well, to answer that, you don't have to hire somebody on your executive team. You could just be working with a consultant or somebody. But you want, as an investor, you want to see that this person is grounded in reality. And so I guess that's one of the things. You know, when it comes to these stocks, a lot of these guys are putting out these silly press releases, making bold promises that they'll never deliver on. So those are the things you want to avoid. I look for people that are taking more of a long-term perspective, that have a plan to get to revenue pretty quickly. So some of these companies, Bobby, that have been around for 6-7 years, they're still not generating revenue. Pretty sad.
Yeah. Okay. So you actually just published an article recently in this most recent issue of the magazine, or the Microcap Review. And the title was Cannabis Investors Have Reasons for Optimism in 2016. And my question to you is, why should they when, and I quote, and this is the first line from the article, when 2015 proved to be a huge disappointment for the publicly traded cannabis stocks, end quote.
Yeah. So 2015 was brutal. The only thing that worked for the year really was Canada. And that was really because of a surprise at the end of the year. So my subscribers were happy because we had one of the stocks that I had put out there as being my favorite was acquired by another one, and then that company did very well in the back half of the year. But the overall index, I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but it was down, I think, 70%, close to that. So I have an index. It's rebalanced quarterly and tries to include a broad number of names. And, you know, there was no way to make money last year. And so when I wrote that, the reason why I said, I think, if I'm recalling correctly, there were a couple things. I thought that Canada moving forward was going to be a positive. I don't know if I mentioned it in the article, but we're starting to see a few better companies. So that's another reason for some optimism. And, you know, we've seen so far this year, it's been a little less than I would like, but I have a focus list, and my focus list is a little bit odd. It includes companies that don't necessarily trade a lot, but I think have a chance of success. And it also includes some really bad companies that do trade a lot. So, the reality is that the cannabis market has a bunch of terrible stocks in it, but they trade. So I have people that care about the trading aspect. And plus, you know, if you're trying to figure out where a good company that doesn't trade could go to, you can observe these bad companies. So I have 30 companies right now. I think 5 or 6 of them are from Canada. And several of them are really bad. But I've added 2 new companies this year. One of them is a consultant. One of them is a company that does packaging in 3 different states. And packaging's kind of an interesting way to play the growth of the industry because, you know, when you have an illegal industry, you don't have packaging. When you have a legal one, there's a lot of compliance. I told you earlier I wasn't aware of any compliance companies, but now I think about it, packaging is kind of a compliance company. I was thinking more of software, but so we're starting to see. So that gives me a little bit of optimism that we're seeing just a few more companies. And there was 2014, I told you that the market went up like 20-fold in a month and a half, 2.5 months, and then crashed. And that really scared a lot of people off. They didn't want to be associated with the OTC or with something that was plunging. So I would not have predicted this, Bobby, but the index through today, which is a little in front of 420, but because we're recording this a little in advance, but it's up 10% year to date, the overall market, which is, I haven't seen. I mean, we had 2 up months in a row, mm-hmm. and we're up. This is April, and we're already up a little bit in April.
Right. Okay. So,
but the real thing is another reason for optimism. I probably didn't call it out in the article, but this, maybe I did actually, because these elections in the back half of the year really are going to draw in people, and that's more of a trade probably. But
okay, so we're starting to round the bend here and getting close to wrapping up. But I was wondering if you could recommend a few resources that you use, resources for investors. So that we can learn more about, you know, not just investing in the cannabis industry, but, you know, where we could go and see interviews and stuff like that.
Sure. Well, I'm glad to see that you guys at SNN are starting to post some interviews of some of the companies. I know you have a high-quality bar, so that's a good way to start. We didn't really talk about New Cannabis Ventures that much, but this is a great resource because I'm covering the whole industry, not just the public stocks. So to answer your question, if you really want to learn about what's going on in the cannabis industry, newcannabisventures.com, it's free. There's a weekly newsletter if you don't want to pay attention to it all the time where the top articles get sent out. You can follow it in Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. So that's a good way to stay on top of the business part of the industry. Now, there are a lot of sites out there to stay on top of, like, the politics, like marijuana.com. MarijuanaPolitics.com. There's definitely a lot of different sites. But if you're an investor, so I have something called the Daily Dab. It's the daily, www.thedailydab.com. Kind of a funny name, but it's the goal of it is, and it's free, I track the most liquid names, and you can just see kind of the daily action. That's all it is. So that's published 5 days a week. really easy to stay on top of the market. 420 Investor, I have split into two different things for people that want to follow the market. If you're really just trying to stay on top of it, I have a newsletter that is published monthly. And so that just helps people to stay on top of it without having to stay on it every day. For people that want to be more on top of it day by day, and also weekly, I put out a good weekly summary, but 420investor.com, it's a due diligence platform. We have a forum in there where people can share their own opinions. It's really more of a community, but a lot of due diligence. So those are some of the things I think can help people stay on top.
All right. So, Alan, let's get one clean plug for the websites and your social media.
Oh, sure. Oh, God, I got to remember all that. Okay, so 420investor.com, singular, 420investor.com. That's my core product. If you go there, you'd be able to get to the newsletter too, I believe. Newcannabisventures.com. That's the B2B content site. Social media. Okay, so at invest420 is my Twitter handle. Pretty active there. Wow, I'm going to have to remember this. But so on NCV Media, facebook.com/NCV Media. That's our New Cannabis Ventures Facebook website. And facebook.com/420investor is the Facebook for 420 Investor.
All right, Alan, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today, and I'm sure we'll be catching up again soon.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting year. Thanks for talking about it now. I know we'll have a lot to say later this year.
Sounds good. Take care, okay?
Yep.
Thank you all for tuning into the Planet Microcap podcast, and thank you, Alan, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast. Go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap Podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap Podcast. Stay tuned for the next Planet Microcap Podcast, where we'll have our next guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of StockNewsNow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap podcast. Have a great week, everyone.